It's Tammy Lawrence of Symbolisti here. Welcome to the I'm Still Here, Messages from the Other Side podcast. This is a group that no one wants to join, but unfortunately, we will all be in this club at some point in our lives. We discuss the grief journey and receiving messages from the other side when our loved ones let us know that they are still close. Together, we will learn to navigate to the other side of grief while still being here. Hello, everyone. Today we are speaking with Linda Schiller. She is a psychotherapist, an author, and international speaker. Linda teaches and consults on trauma treatment, PTSD, and nightmares. Her latest book, PTS Dreams, helps to transform nightmares from trauma through healing dream work. It teaches you how to turn dreams into resources for spiritual growth. Hello, Linda.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Tammy. How are you today?
Good, thank you. So dreams, something everybody can relate to.
Yes.
On different levels. Yeah, it's interesting because I had a dream last night, actually, and there was a whole bunch of people in this dream. And when I woke up thinking about this podcast this morning, I remember hearing somewhere that the mind can't make up faces. So you dream of people you've actually seen. Is that true? Or can the mind make up faces of people that you've never met before?
Well, that's interesting because I've heard a lot of things, but I've never heard that the mind can't make up faces, because our unconscious actually comprises about 90% of our mind or our brain. And it can go places that our conscious mind can't even dream of, actually. So we can have people who are familiar to us in our dreams, people from our lives, and we can have complete total strangers who are dream characters in our dreams that have, you know, nothing to do, at least on the surface, with anyone we know in our waking lives. So
yeah, interesting. It is an area that there's so much information about. I remember hearing one time that dreams are just mind garbage. And it's just the brain trying to kind of work out your life experience. And then I've also heard people who believe that dreams are maybe premonitory and tell you about things that could potentially happen in your future or deal with things from your past. So where do you kind of, where's your belief system on dreams and where do they stem from?
So I have been doing this work both in my professional life and my personal life for over 40 years. So I clearly don't think that it's just brain garbage. That's a sort of a really outdated and very sort of scientific, linear, there's only one way to understand the world, which is completely rational point of view. And even what we now know about the science, particularly in the world of quantum science and quantum physics, we know that this is not just a theory. We know that there are multiple time, spaces, and dimensions, and that there are multiple realities, and that our dreaming life helps us to tap into other layers and levels of reality that our conscious mind is capable of. And dreams have been revered and honored throughout history. If you go to any indigenous native culture through antiquity, you will find, generally speaking, that the dreamers are the most highly revered people in the community. They're the shamans, they're the prophets, they're the leaders, they're the ones that help guide the people. And in modern Western world, we have sort of moved away from connecting with nature and with the spiritual world in a way that helps us to really grow. And I think that we're getting more and more reconnected with that at this point in time in our lives. So that's half of the answer. And the other half of the answer is that when we dream, there are multiple layers of meaning to a dream. It's not even that a dream has some meaning. A dream has lots of meaning. And these multiple layers, Tammy, can be simultaneously true. So in my two books, the first one, Modern Dreamwork, and the most recent one that just came out is PTS Dreams, I articulate a method that I designed for looking at the multiple layers of the dream. So it's based on the pardes, and pardes is a Hebrew word that literally translates into meaning orchard, and it's often thought of as an allegory for the Garden of Eden, but it's also an acronym. In English, the P, R, D, and S, each letter stands for a Hebrew word, and we use this system when we're reading the holy books. We're reading the Bible, we're reading Tanakh, we're reading Talmud, so we're looking for increasing layers of deepening meaning. And I applied the system to dream work. So the four layers in a dream that we might think of, which include, and I'm going to get to your question about prophetic dreams as well. The top layer is the P or Pshat, which just means the simple layer. And that's the dream as we dream it. It's the story. It's the landscape. It's what we remember when we wake up from our dream. That's the Pshat layer. The R, in Hebrew, the word is remez, which means hinted at. So this is our first associations to the dream, where we wake up and we go, oh, yeah, this reminds me of that. Or, oh, right, I was down at the beach yesterday, and that's why I dreamed about a beach in my dream. So it's a pretty easy association. Or, oh, there's someone in my dream who kind of reminds me of my mom. It's not my mom, but it reminds me of her. And maybe this person in the dream is supposed to be my mom. So that's the next layer. The third layer is the drash, which stands for, it comes from the word lidrosh, which means to chase after or to pursue. And this is the layer we go to most often when we're doing dream work, when we're exploring the multiple possibilities that our dreams might have for us, including symbol, including metaphor, including deeper associations, including directions the dream might be pointing us toward that aren't necessarily found in the dream, but are pointing us in a certain direction. And this layer we can explore through many different types of dream work, from Jungian active imagination to gestalt work, where we embody the different people and characters and landscapes in our dreams, and a variety of others as well. And then the final layer, the sod, stands for the word secret. And this is the transpersonal and mystical layer. And this is the layer, I think, where you're asking about. And this is a layer where we can peek around the corners of time and space and see things that might happen in the future, where we can get health alerts. They're called prodromal dreams. We might get warnings about our health to follow through on. This is a transpersonal layer where we can dream not only for ourselves, but for others as well and for the world. So at this layer, we also might have prophetic dreams, and we might have visitation dreams where our departed relatives not just show up as a metaphor or image, but actually have a visitation with us in our dreams. So sort of a longish answer to your question.
Yeah, those last dreams, those ones are my favorite. When the loved ones, past loved ones drop in, I love those ones the most. So very much like an onion, the layer after layer after layer here.
That's exactly right. It's a really good analogy. It's like peeling an onion. And you can stop, you know, at any point in time. Sometimes you have a dream and it was just a really fun dream. And it was enjoyable, it was pleasant, and it's like, oh, this is really fun, and there's nothing I want to do with it. I just want to enjoy it. But when you get the dreams that are upsetting, distressing, and start moving into the category of nightmares, then we're getting an SOS from our unconscious that there's something that we're needing to know or needing to and or needing to do that we haven't fully understood or metabolized yet. And these are the dreams where we really do want to peel that onion to get to what's underneath, so that we can resolve whatever it is that is contributing to or causing us to have those nightmares. Those are the ones that aren't as fun as just my beloved grandmother came to say hi in a dream.
Yeah, for sure. So the process to do this, we would obviously journal so we remember the dream.
Right. That's a very good point. We tend to not remember the dreams that we don't get down in some way, shape, or form, because we all dream every single night, 5 to 7 REM cycles per night for most people. So we have 5 to 7 dreams every night. We don't remember most of them. So the best way to recall our dreams is to jot them down, is to journal them as quickly as possible after we've woken up. So yes, that would be one of the strongest recommendations if you want to work with your dreams, is to write them down.
So just to jump around a little bit, why is it that we forget that dream? Because it was so clear and so vivid, just especially the ones just before you wake up. And then you get up, you go have your shower, and all of a sudden, what was that dream again? But you knew exactly what it was when first upon waking.
When we're asleep, our body-mind system is in a different state of consciousness than when we're awake. Right. So there's actually a continuum of consciousness, which ranges from full wide awake walking around in our life to full sound asleep dreaming. And in between, we've got, I'm awake, but I'm kind of spacing out. I'm daydreaming. I've had highway hypnosis and I've missed my exit on the highway, to various trance states and hypnotherapy states. And that in-between state between waking and sleeping is called the hypnopompic or the hypnagogic zone, where we kind of have a foot in both worlds. And that's the best place, if you can, to catch a dream, to write it down before you've moved completely out of the sleeping state into your waking state. It's simply a state change, which is why we don't remember. And dreams are living experiences. So when we're asleep, we are awake in our dreams just as much as we are awake in waking life. So that it is an embodied experience. I think part of what shakes us out of remembering is we move our bodies. And when we move our bodies, we kind of lose the embodied felt sense of the dream, and then it disappears. So in addition to journaling our dreams, what I often recommend is, if people want to remember their dreams, try to hold very still when you first wake up and don't move too much, and just very slowly kind of roll over, grab your journal and write it down. Or if you're a, you know, phone typer, you know, type it into your phone, wherever it is. Because the more you move your body, like as you said, when we get up and hop in the shower, it's like, oh, there was a dream, but it's gone because you've moved. You'll get more of the dream if you can not move. And here's a trick or a tip for you and for your listeners. If you've moved, if you forgot, and you get up and you're in the shower and you've had a dream, you say, oh, I can't remember. If at all possible, go back to bed for a minute. Put your body back in the same position that you were sleeping in. And you may recall your dream through what's called positional memory. Mm. So your body itself will help you to remember the dream you had once it's in the same physical position it was that you had the dream. And I do this on occasion, and it never ceases to amaze me how powerful that sort of reenactment of the physical state of sleep is to remembering the dream.
It really takes it to mind, body, spirit, right? And you kind of connect all three of the things together.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think some of it too maybe is practice. I know I've worked on with dreams for years myself, just as on a personal level. And I find the more that you focus on little components or little portions of it, like if you can remember one detail, then after some time and lots of practice, you can kind of can fill in the rest of the blanks. Like, okay, what happened after that? And for me, my dreams are extremely vivid and they jump all over the place. They don't seem to make much sense upon first view of them. But when you start to dig a little bit deeper, as you say, there's so many different levels and layers. Dream dictionaries. What is your view on a dream dictionary?
Dream dictionaries, take them with a grain of salt or a shaker of salt, because we are people that live within a community and live within a culture. So we do have common cultural frames of reference. So sometimes a symbol that is a culturally common symbol might be the same for you and for your neighbor and for the person around the corner. But dreams and dream symbols are actually idiosyncratic. In other words, they're personal to the dreamer. So we can't just look up in a book and say, oh, if I dreamt of a cat, we were talking about cats before, it means this. Because it might mean this to you, but it might mean something else to someone else.
I have a good analogy for that. Like the sorry to cut you off.
That's okay.
The whole black cat thing, right? We're cat people. So if you tell us about a black cat or we were to dream of a black cat, to us, that wouldn't probably, to speak for you, I maybe shouldn't, but we speak of a black cat. That's not a negative. But for someone else, a black cat, oh, that must be a really bad dream because it was a black cat and it crossed my path. Does that kind of make it clear as far as this dream dictionary thing goes?
Right. What's the most important thing in terms of deciphering what a dream or dream symbol means to you is what's called the emotional narrative that goes along with your dream. So it's not just the storyline itself. So when you're working with a dream, pay attention to how you're emotionally feeling the beginning, the middle, and the end of your dream. And the emotions associated with the objects, with the scenario, with the events happening in your dream are going to give you the clues or the hints or point you in the direction of what the dream is about. So if you and I dream of a black cat crossing our path, and we kind of crouch down and go, oh, what a beautiful cat. Look at that lovely fur. And we feel delighted to see this cat. That's one kind of dream. And our emotional state is, isn't this lovely? It feels warm and friendly and nice. Someone else dreams of the same black cat crossing their path and they're terrified. That's a different dream, right? So it's the emotional resonance and emotional response to the symbol in the dream that gives us our hint as to what this might be about. So it is a cultural piece where we associate, for example, black cats with something negative or with witchcraft. But even if we take something that's neutral, like you and I, if I dream of, let's say I went down to the beach, we were talking about beach before, and in my dream, I'm at the beach, and it's a beautiful sunny day and the waves are lapping the shore and I can hear the seagulls and I'm just feeling peaceful. That's one dream. But if you go down to the beach and it's a warm and sunny day and the waves are lapping the shore, but for some reason you're feeling uneasy and you're feeling nervous and you keep looking over your shoulder afraid somebody might jump out at you, it's the exact same dream but different emotional state. So they mean two different things.
Right. So how do you dive into, okay, this made me feel X, Y, Z. How do I make sense of that? What's the process that I would take in order to start to understand why I had that emotion within the dream?
So the first thing I would do, as you suggested before, is I would want to write down, because once, if particularly if we're having an upsetting dream or a nightmare, we want to get it out of our heads and onto the paper so it's not just running around inside of us all the time. And this is always true, but even especially true for repetitive dreams or repetitive nightmares. The next step would be, depending on how upsetting it is, to check in to see if you have enough resources to address this dream or nightmare on your own. So one of the other methods that I articulate in the book is called the Gaia method, which is the guided active imagination approach. And this method uses what I've learned over the four decades of doing trauma treatment with PTSD and doing dream work with people to make sure that the dreamer is resourced and safe enough to explore really upsetting material before they go into exploring really upsetting material. Because for starters, you know, Hippocrates said, do no harm. So we want to make sure we're not accidentally re-traumatizing ourselves or somebody else in working with the dream. So there are two steps to doing this work. And the first step is to gather your resources, to gather your posse in waking life of friends, relatives, pets, real or imaginary, dead or alive, safety objects you might like, anything that makes you feel safe, protected, and grounded. Make sure you feel okay before looking at a really, really scary dream. Now, if it's just a little tiny bit upsetting, you might not need to do this. But if it's a really scary dream, check to be sure you're grounded and feeling safe in your body and in your space beforehand. And then you go into the dream and you start working with that onion, the way you described, and peeling off layers of association. And what does this remind me of? Where might I have felt these emotions before? Is there anything in my waking life that I can connect to this? This is called the bridge to life. Robert Moss, I think, coined that phrase, bridge to life. So you go to the dream and you say, is there anything about feeling uneasy and being on a beach and being worried that someone might jump out and attack me that I can connect to and relate to in my life, either right now or recently or a long time ago? Because sometimes things can be triggered in our present day life by an event or a circumstance that connects back to something that happened a long time ago. And we then have another opportunity to work it through and get some resolution on it.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like I'm feeling that maybe listeners might feel a little lost in that process of not being able to be guided. Does your book offer kind of guidance through?
Yeah, each chapter is full of exercises that helps walk you through exactly what to do. So each chapter has at least one, and some chapters have several exercises, both interwoven through the chapter and at the end, that really lays out in very clear and explicit directions, try this, and then this, and then this. And the other thing that both I personally and professionally, as well as in the book, articulate is that we don't have to do this alone. It's really useful and helpful to work with someone or several other people when doing dream work, because we all have blind spots and none of us can see the back of our own heads without at least two mirrors. So even though I've been doing this for 40 years, I don't catch everything about my dreams if I just look at them myself. Jung himself famously said that he couldn't decipher or interpret his own dreams because he couldn't figure out all the layers of consciousness without someone else giving him a perspective that he wouldn't have had. So I strongly encourage people to have a dream buddy that they work with. And you can do dream sharing together on a, you know, regular basis or once in a while. And what I also recommend, if you're interested, is to get involved in a dream circle. I personally have been in a dream circle for almost 40 years, and I run professional dream circles as well that I've been doing for years and years as well. And a dream circle simply is you get together with a group of people for the purpose of working on and understanding your dreams and each other's dreams. And it's just amazing, you know, because the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. So we get so many additional layers of information when we sit together with a group of 4, 6, or 8 people, because then we have their perspectives on my dream. And when I'm working on other people's dreams, I might get my own resonance with stuff that they've dreamt. So it's a win-win, even if you're not working on your own dream, by working with a group of others.
It's like, I love this idea. It's like a dream mastermind.
In a way. Yeah. It's sort of like a hive mind, I guess. Mm-hmm. When you say that, it makes me think of that.
Yeah. It's like you always have more clarity when it's somebody else's situation. It's easier to figure out someone else's stuff versus your own. If you think of a friend and the experience they're going through, well, you should blah, 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 whatever it is. But if it's your own experience, it's much more challenging to say, okay, what steps should I take to get myself out of the situation or whatever, get through the situation?
Absolutely. That's, I think, part of the nature of human nature is we can see other people's stuff more clearly than our own because we don't have our own blocks in the way then. It's also true, any of your listeners are parents, you know, you can tell your kids something and they will not listen to you. But let someone else who's not their parent tell them the exact same thing. And it's like, oh, yeah, I'll do that. I got it. I have a double whammy because I'm a therapist as well. So when I make a suggestion to my daughter, not only might she not, you know, want to accept it because I'm her mother, but also I'm a therapist. And she'd go, Mom, don't therapize me, but let her friend or her colleague, you know, tell her the same thing. It's like, oh yeah, that's a good idea. It's kind of like that with students too.
I'm a fur baby mama. I don't have any kids. So my cats, they don't listen to this.
They definitely have minds of their own. Yes.
They sure do. And they want
I started out with fur babies too.
Yeah. And they want to control our minds too. So there's that. Speaking of that, like there's even cats dreamed. I mean, animals dream. I think this is something that kind of goes throughout. I mean, different levels than how we would, but you know, you see them sleeping and they get their twitches and they're pawing and you know, there's something going on in that little mind.
Oh, absolutely. I've seen it with my cats and I've seen it with my friend's dogs. And we actually do know for a fact that all mammals at any rate dream. I can imagine that fish and frogs and birds have their own versions of dreams as well. But we have never, you know, put electrodes on their heads to find out what's going on in their brains when they're sleeping. But we know when our cats and dogs are, you know, we can almost imagine they're chasing that squirrel or you know, because you can see them moving and they clearly are, something's going on in there with our sleep. Absolutely.
Sure. So can dreams be directional? Like, can I work towards, how do I work towards, I want to dream about, say, this person. This podcast deals a lot with grief and the grieving journey. So say I want to connect with whomever who's passed away. Is there a certain way, not only a deceased loved one, but is there a certain way that we can kind of direct ourselves towards, like, I want to dream in this way and have it actually be.
Yes. Yes. So there's a whole chapter in each book about what's called incubating a dream. Mm. And incubating dreams is an ancient practice that is basically doing exactly what you're saying, is asking for a particular dream in order to help you answer a question, solve a problem, get information, connect with a loved one, whatever it is you want. You're basically spending, in modern day life, you spend a few minutes, anywhere from, you know, 5 minutes to as long as you want, a half an hour, doing some journaling. And you write down in your dream journal a sentence, asking a question. The more clearly you can articulate your question, the higher the likelihood is that you'll get a dream come through, that you can understand the connection of the dream with that question. And it, like anything else, you need to practice. Perhaps you might get your answer right away, or you might get the connection with your loved one right away, but you might need to sort of prime the pump and do it for a while. And I want to come back to address that question about working through grief and loss. But let me just do a quick backup and talk about where the concept of dream incubation started, at least in Western culture, was in the temples of Asclepius in ancient Greece. And people would come to these healing temples from all over the known world with physical or emotional pain or distress. And often they would come with heartbreak and grief. And they'd come to the temples and they would do a purification and a cleansing process with the priest and priestess at the temple. Then they would be led into the temple to sleep there at night. And in the night, they would sleep in this temple of Asclepius, and the priests and priestesses would let loose these little small greenish-yellow snakes that would slither around. Yeah, not your cup of tea. It'd slither around between the sleepers, and the story goes, the snakes would then whisper in the ear of the sleepers to give them dreams. And in the morning, the supplicant would wake up and then talk to the priest and priestess about the dream they had from the snake. And they would get a prescription, if you will, of what to do to heal from whatever the distress or dilemma that they brought to the temple. And so variations on this have come forward from antiquity through now. And luckily nowadays we don't need to sleep with snakes in order to, to do dream incubation. We can do that on our own. But if you are grieving, if you are sad, if you've had a loss, partially we know that this is part of life. And we can't just wish away our heartbreak if we're feeling sad and missing a person. We can, however, invite our th- through our dreams a couple of possibilities. One, we can ask our dreams for help or assistance in coping, help or assistance in healing from the loss, help or assistance in finding and making meaning from either the loss or from our relationship with that person. If it's someone who's beloved and we would like to have a soul-to-soul visit, we can ask through our dreams, we can invite them to come through. And the dreams where we get a visitation have a qualitative difference than a dream that's a similar metaphor. And if you or your listeners have ever had a visitation dream, there's a vividness to them, and they're often very, very comforting, lovely, lovely connections where you really hear the sound of your loved one's voice, or you feel the touch of their hand on your shoulder, and you know, you just know that they're there with you. And that's actually literally yesterday I was working with my dream circle, and the members of my dream circle went on a safari to Africa, and she was really excited to go, but she was a little bit nervous too. So she said, before she went, she said, I invited all my departed relatives to watch out for me. Her mom, her dad, and her sister had all passed. And she said, I invited them all to watch out for me while I was in Africa. And sure enough, while she was there, she had dreams that her mom, her dad, and her sister were in to let her know that they were there watching out for her. And she even went so far as to say, because her dad is the one who crosses over most frequently. He's the one that's, some of our relatives, right, are easier to kind of get in touch with, and others less so. Mm-hmm. She said, well, I want a sign to let me know that my dad is here with me. And I'm going to just give him a pseudonym to protect her privacy. I'm going to call him Charles. And she was looking for a sign. And sure enough, in Africa, one day she was walking down one of the streets and she looked up and she saw a street sign, and it said Charles Street. And she said, oh, there it is. Dad's with me. Got it. So that's an example of a waking dream.
Yeah.
That we can invite as well. That's a synchronicity that is like a waking dream.
And this goes back to what you said with the dream incubation. So she set the intention that this is what I'm wanting, and then it actually came to fruition. So really cool. Yeah.
It's so interesting. When we set an intention, how strong that can actually be in terms of manifesting something in our life. Mm-hmm. A, if we practice, and B, if we believe in it. I amaze myself sometimes. We don't have control over everything. That's for sure. But just as a little example of setting an intention and manifesting, in July, I flew to Tucson. I'm in the Boston area. And I flew out to Tucson for my dream conference. This was the first time we met live in 3 years since COVID. This is the IASD, the International Association for the Study of Dreams. It's a fantastic organization, and I highly recommend to your readers, if they're interested in dreams, to connect with it. Next year, it's going to be in Ashland, Oregon, June, just FYI. But anyway, there's been a lot of difficulty over the past several months with air travel. You know, we've been hearing stories about delays and cancellations and lost luggage and all this stuff. So this was the first time I was getting on a plane in 3 years. So I could have spent a lot of time worrying, like, oh my God, what might happen? But I actually decided, not only am I not going to worry, but I'm just going to intend and project forward that it's all going to be fine. So pretty much every day, I would tell somebody that I'm going to Tucson, and I expect that my flights will be fine. I even had to change planes. There was no direct flight. And I just said that every day, I expect there'll be no trouble. This is going to be really easy. And sure enough, I had 4 flights, 2 there and 2 back, with 0 difficulties. No delays, no lost luggage, everything on time. It's like, I can't take complete personal responsibility for that, but I'm really convinced that I participated in manifesting that for myself.
Absolutely. I love that story. And that's the thing. Oftentimes when I'm struggling with something, I'll like stop myself and say, okay, let this be effortless and easy. And then I'll switch. Mm-hmm. It is effortless and easy. And 90% of the time, it will be effortless and easy because you set that intention.
Oh, that's great. I'm going to borrow that phrase sometime. I love that, effortless and easy. Yeah. Nice.
I actually can give it to you. It was from Bob Proctor. I think he used to teach that effortless and easy thinking. So,
well, thank you, Bob.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of people from the other side. So as far as this dream surveillance goes, we could call it dream surveillance, analyzing our dreams and looking into deepening into the dreams. Is there any advice that you would have for someone who is really struggling with something and can't get clarity beyond getting help from a group of individuals? Is there one place to direct them? Would it be your book, possibly?
Oh, thank you. Sure. Excuse me. There'd be two things I'd say. Depending on the level of emotional upset that someone had, that emotional narrative, and also depending on if any of the listeners know that they're struggling or dealing with traumatic events in their life, either currently or historically, don't neglect contacting a professional. Get in touch with a therapist. Have someone who has experience and who does this work to accompany you on this journey to help you figure out what you need and where you can go for healing. So in addition to getting professional help when needed, I absolutely would say my books would be a guide and an aid for people who want to do this work either on their own or with friends and relatives. And the first book is called Modern Dream Work, and that has its own website, www.moderndreamwork.com. And the subtitle of that is New Tools for Decoding Your Soul's Wisdom. So that came out a couple of years ago, also through Llewellyn. And then the new one that literally just dropped yesterday to be open for the general public is PTS Dreams. And the subtitle is Transform Your Nightmares from Trauma Through Healing Dream Work. And that one has a website, www.ptsdreams.com. And they're available through the publisher, through Llewellyn. They're available through bookshop.org, which is an indie bookstore connective place. You can get things online. Of course, you can get them through Amazon. And if someone wanted to just find out a little bit more about me and see what I do in my life and my work, or if they're interested in getting a dream circle set up and having some consultation about organizing a dream circle for themselves, my website is Linda Yael Schiller. That's Linda Yaelschiller.com. And then you can sort of read about what I do in my life and my work and make contact with me through that if you'd like.
Well, that's great. Thank you for sharing that information. So we'll put all of those links in the show notes so that listeners can just click quickly and get to you and maybe buy your book or something. Yeah. Wonderful. Great. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. I appreciate your time and your energy. And this was an awesome conversation.
Thank you. It was a really delightful to speak with you too, Tammy. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Okay. So long.
Thank you for listening. We're grateful to our guests for sharing their experiences and knowledge of the grieving journey. Please be sure to subscribe to this podcast, leave a rating and a review. You can follow us on social media through the links offered in the show notes. If you know somebody who could benefit from this podcast, please be sure to share it with them. A special shout out to Kevin MacLeod and Computech for the background music entitled Happy Dreams. If you yourself have a story that you'd like to share, please email me at reikiandyoga@yahoo.com. I look forward to speaking with you. Until next time.